For October the 4th, 2019, we talk about Code Vein, Man of Medan, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 301. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. 301. So we are in the second half of the show. It is fall now. Yeah.
It is fall now. You can tell by the 86 degree weather.
Yeah, it was like that. It was like that up here, too. It was a real bummer. Yeah. No, I wanted to go out and do some work in my garage, and it was too hot and muggy to do it. Hey, Ohio.
Yeah. Hey, world.
Yeah.
We hosted a Fire Pit Friday party for our neighborhood. So during the fall, just like every weekend, a different house will just hold a party in their backyard. So, you know, people bring food. They're super low maintenance. And I was all excited. We bought a fire pit so we could host Fire Pit Friday.
Okay.
And I, you know, got to that point in the night. Crowd was kind of here. I'm like, all right, I'm starting the fire. Got it rip roaring. And was like, this was a mistake.
Nobody wants to sit around a fire when it's this muggy.
Everyone was on the other half of the yard. It was unbearable. Oh. Like, just you know, soupy as you can get. So, man.
How do you buy a pit? Isn't a pit a lack of thing?
it's like a fire, so I don't want to like say, you know, speak for you what kind you get, but like there's some that sit above ground. It's more like a fire bowl kind of thing, or you can
like a brazier.
Yeah like just a, the catch-all, like a fire ring. Like I would call a fire ring a fire pit, you know, something things like that. Like I have one that sits above ground. It's like a fire bowl, but it's caged in and has a lid. And it's on wheels and stuff. It sits on my patio.
I call that one fire doom. Two marshmallows go in, one come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I like fire brazier because every time you light it, you've got a, you know, 10% chance of, you know, summoning unspeakable powers.
Well, yeah. Or, you know, a key will drop from the air. You hear a little tune. Da-na-na-na. Yeah. What kind of fire pit did you get, Dennis? Let's dad out about this.
We got the actual pit, and the tricky part was getting it home in the car because you set it in the wrong place and it just goes right through.
Right.
And there's a hole in your
car.
Got
yourself a Flintstones car.
Yeah. So we got your basic kind of slightly raised bowl above the ground.
Gotcha.
And it was, too hot for it that night. Last night, we went back out and lit a fire just so we could cook hot dogs over it. Mm-hmm. And that was fantastic for the boys, except like I pulled it kind of out of the flames. I'm like, this is really incredibly sooty. Like, yes. I don't know what I put in there, but kids, Daddy's going to go inside and wash these off.
Wait, what were you washing off?
Cooked dogs. Hot dog.
Yeah.
Oh, the hot dog. Okay.
Yeah. It was something was burning real black in there. Let's see. Yeah. My kids had hot dogs and cancer for dinner.
Oh yeah,
but you know it's a great time.
So hot dogs.
But yeah, we've been in general enjoying the outdoorsiness of fall with the heat of summer. There's I don't know if you guys have looked or remember my backyard that well, but in the back right corner there's a more woodsy area.
Yeah.
And in that there's actually a creek that runs through, just a little drainage creek, but it's been kind of fenced off and overgrown. And so this weekend I also started the project to like clear that out to be a more, it's, you know, it'll still be foresty, but you'll be able to run around back there.
That's good.
So that, yeah, when the kids, when we go out and play in the great outdoors, it's right there in the backyard.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like
so
to hear
I'm excited
that
about that. Yeah, yeah. It'll be good times.
Yeah. Your backyard's cool. You've got that covered area by it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have been here since we hung lights. We hung lights around Mother's Day this year, I think, or maybe last year. I don't remember. but that gets real pretty if you're hanging outside at night. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, nice. Offer to help dig a moat still stands.
I just drag the fire pit around and it just kind of leaves the hole.
Yes. Yeah. Just fill it with water. Yeah. Let me think.
Was it? It wasn't Donut Country. There was a game about that.
Yeah, Donut County. Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
There's that old Looney Tunes cartoon.
Mm-hmm. A lot of good pit related media out there.
I know, right?
I guess if you're playing D&D, you know, and the portable hole is a classic.
Well, of course. Mm.
You have to have, you know, some place to store your movable rod.
Pits are the tops. Yeah. I don't know. I've got other fall related stuff. Had a fun football party yesterday. It's football season. When it was over at my dad's.
Who'd you watch?
So it was a rivalry game. It was the Cleveland Browns versus the Cleveland Browns, by which I mean the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So the Browns left Cleveland back in the late 90s. That's a huge sore spot. So the the Browns left, became the Ravens. Then a new team called the Browns was brought in as an expansion team. And, you know, just one of those things, my dad, it was my dad's family, dad's house where I went to watch this. It was fun. It was fun watching them win. I think that, you know, in conversations where conversations about sports where I do more than nod my head and say names that I recognize, I'm generally not into sports. I'm not somebody who will say, oh, sports ball. Well, I'm not that kind of like bad nerd about that. But, you know, I am about as close to a sports agnostic as you can get. And I think that has entirely to do with the fact that I grew up in the Cleveland media market.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the Indians did good a couple of times, but then sucked. The Browns are terrible and always have been.
You got that Bud Light fridge for the first time they won a game.
OSU's fine, but, like they are just, like, only, like, intermittently good. It's really dependent, like, year over year. There's not really, like, a franchise, really. Yeah, but it was fun.
How much cheating can they get away with in a given year?
Right. How much, like, weird recruitment stuff can they do? So, like, I don't generally, like, watch or talk about sports unless I'm over at families, but, like, it's fun. Like, one of the guys, Chubb, he ran a touchdown 88 yards, which was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. So they won, and it was fun to... It was fun to sit around people who are more invested than me, getting super excited about good plays and stuff. So, yeah.
It was sports watching and people watching.
Yeah.
On a semi-related note, I feel like the greatest thing in the world to, like, not know anything about and watch with people that are really into it is professional wrestling. Mm. I feel like for very, very similar reasons.
Yeah. It's like, you know,
With that, the drama is guaranteed.
Yes, it is written into the story. Yeah. So that is my boring fall story is football season has started and I had a good time watching a game.
Did anybody grill out at the game? And if so, did anyone clink the little clamps that you have at the grill? You know what I'm talking about?
What?
You know, like the thing that you use to turn over the meat, you got to like snap them together.
You got Zoid Burger.
Yeah.
Nobody grilled out. It was all kitchen food this time.
All right.
I don't know. I feel like that wasn't a great story. David rescue us.
I've not got that much. I'm prepping for hoping to sign up and do a in November, there's a event called Beat the Crap Out of Cancer.
Okay.
Which is basically like a benefit run or whatever, except with stick fighting. hence the name.
Is it 100-person battle royale stick fight?
I don't think that, but, you know, it's whatever you want to do, you know, whatever weapons or, you know, lack thereof you want to go with type of thing. It's kind of sort of an introductory thing to if you want to then do the gathering, which is kind of the, like, once a year, big, stick fight that the organization I'm a part of does.
Okay.
So, and actually it was kind of fun this, last week, a bunch of people, actually just got back from the gathering, which was in, California. So we, got together and watched a bunch of the fights. I think my favorite highlights was, there's some people who fought with, 2x3 boards and, riot shields. There were some people who, fought with whips, bull whips, which was also interesting because about halfway through the whips somehow, got like hit each other and got knotted to each other. And they proceed to immediately just start going jump rope style.
Okay.
Because what else you gotta do? But yeah, no, it was really interesting seeing that, some great stick stuff, some great bladed things are a lot of fun because those tend to be a lot more technical. So really good time.
Nice. Yeah, well, I hope you succeed in beating the crap out of cancer.
Yes,
It's been getting a free ride for too long.
Exactly. Someone's got to stand up to that cancer.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I don't know if I have a story that can top yours, Cole. I did chores at my house over the weekend. I realized that I probably shouldn't live alone because I do a bunch of weird stuff with my apartment. So, like, I have a tent set up in my living room because, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago I had people in town, and so I was sleeping in a tent out in the living room, and I just haven't put it away because I have friends coming to town this weekend, so it's like, I can just leave that there. That's no problem.
I don't know that that's weird. I mean, lazy might be the right word, although that has a little bit too much, like lazy and slothful, like the while technically correct, also feels like it carries a lot of judgment. Like, I don't actually like look down on you for leaving that tent up because I don't know, it sucks putting a tent up.
Wait, you know? Why tent as opposed to like air mattress?
There's an air mattress in the tent. And then, like, a little lantern and stuff. It's all my camping equipment that I did not use for the entirety of living in Austin, but I used it when I was living in Vegas. So I think I'm just subconsciously trying to use it more.
Oh, yeah.
To be fair, your house does have a roof, correct?
It does.
Okay, good. Okay.
I can understand this. I can really understand this. If you are sleeping in the living room, you feel a little bit exposed if somebody gets up in the middle of the night and they see you sleeping, looking all bad like most people do when they sleep. You know, you want to have some visual separation.
Yeah, exactly. You give me cold.
If I had a tent in my living room, that would be literally the entirety of my living room. Also the entirety of my house.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So I hope that you understand. I do not look down on you for leaving the tent up. I also would not want to go through that process.
I know you look down on me for other reasons, Cole. I get that.
it all comes out in the wash.
So to be fair, I've debated putting up a tent in my living room just because I like tents. So
I'll also say I did not have a problem setting up the tent. I just don't want to put away the tent because, like how you have to pack it really tight.
Oh, yeah, stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like taking a board game out of the box, and you got to put it back in a way that fits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that we have achieved some banter, you guys. I think that we've got the regular kind of show in us here for tonight. We've got the grind, the multiplayer, and then the end boss. So why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, because I know you're playing something new that the community is interested in, I will go to you first.
Yes, I am playing Code Vein, which is a wonderful vampire dress-up simulator that I actually talked about on 300 for my news story.
You talked about the promo thing that they did where they gave a free copy to people who gave blood at TwitchCon.
Yeah, And no joke, that was the first I'd heard of the game and all I knew about the game. I promise you, like, this game, you know, obviously comes from Bandai Namco and has a lot of Dark Souls DNA in it, and I'll get to that. But I swear to God, this game completely blindsided me.
I don't know that anybody was accusing you of...
I was just surprised at myself. Like, I just can't believe I missed it. Like, one, just being someone who generally follows video games. Two, someone who enjoys the Souls style of games. And then three, someone who's in specifically the Duckfeed community, which probably has a higher concentration of Souls fans per capita than, mm-hmm. than most places. I I'm not speaking defensively. I'm speaking in terms of this was like a very welcome surprise.
Yeah, this was like right up the alley for you.
Yeah, completely did not partake in the hype cycle. When I, you know, talked about the game, I had never heard about it before. And then suddenly there were ads everywhere, like every Facebook ad, takeover of polygon.com. Like, it was just everywhere. And after, I guess it would have been after Fire Pit Friday, right? I was looking at my phone and saw that it was actually out that night. And just before I knew what I was doing, hit the download button. I was like, yes, I would like to dress up some vampires. That sounds fun.
I mean, so like you're playing into the meme about it because so this does have an anime aesthetic to it. And you do have an awful lot of character creation kind of stuff. Like, I want to understand why you're leading into that meme, though.
Yeah, I think that is the anime aesthetic, you know, whatever that kind of doesn't sway me one way or another. The amount of detail in the character creator and then also the inconsistency of detail in the character creator is super, super enigmatic and just like very weird and interesting. But I think the reason I centered in on it so much was one, knowing it was going to be detailed, and then two, seeing the aesthetic, I was like, you know, there's a story idea that I've had in my head for a long time that has a couple characters in it that I've never done anything with. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go make those characters.
Okay.
And that worked really, really well. And I was incredibly pleased with the results. And you know, to the extent that they're, you know, the character creator allowed me to do that, the gameplay doesn't really bear out further than that, but to have something running around that looks like exactly like what was in your head is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
And it was fun. They have managed to take something that could be incredibly obtuse and hard and giving you all the right kinds of control for the most part. Mm-hmm. So instead of being able to, you know, adjust ear tilt and jawline brevity and all these things that I have no idea what the hell they actually do, except for make for good Monster Factory episodes.
No middle sliders.
Yeah, exactly.
this gotta gives get you that kawaii slider.
Yeah. so there's not really that, but there are still a ton of options. So, you know, there's a ton of accessories, there's a ton of hairstyles. When you place the accessories, you're given a ton of control around where exactly they go. And so I had this idea in my head for this this guy with dreadlocks and a top hat. And so I went and got dreadlocks. Of course I found them, and then I went and got a top hat, because of course there's a top hat. Mm-hmm. But I looked around, I was like, I'm not sure I really like the clipping on the dreadlocks coming off the back of the top hat. I think this character, if he was going to wear it, would kind of push it forward into the side a little bit, just like kind of a little, you know, aggressive tilt, and that would fit his hairstyle better. I wonder if I can do that. And there were multiple options for a small tilty top hat available to me. And then you can, once you've picked that, you can go in and adjust the size. You can adjust how tilted it is. And it's basically like choose how much clipping you want in your game. in terms of how you put things together.
Right.
I will be very excited to see what happens when the community really gets a hold of the character creator and plays with it in full, because since you can play around with where accessories go and how they're positioned on the body so much, it should be fairly easy to take all the different geographies and kind of assemble different structures.
Okay.
Basically, what I'm saying is
basically you are dicks.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, so you're going to get dicks. That comes out day one. Day two is recreations of characters from popular media.
Yeah, we'll get Mario. They made level 1-1. I don't understand the character creator.
You beat me to the joke, and that makes me very upset. So
we're on each other's wavelength here. Yeah. But yeah, just the character creator works well and was easy to comprehend. The one thing that I don't like is when you get into the finite adjustment controls, there's no way to adjust the camera without backing out. And you just kind of reflexively use the right stick trying to get a better look. And
so because you mess up. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's very finite positioning. It matters what angle the camera's at. And so to do it without screwing everything up, you got to kind of like back out, adjust the camera, go in, tweak, back out, adjust the camera, et cetera. But it, you know, there is an actual game, and I'll set aside the meme.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask. So is the extremely comprehensive character creator, does that work to a purpose or is it for its own sake?
No, it is immediately covered up by the first piece of armor you get in the game.
Oh, so it's it's like Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah. So the second character that I made, I made two, was one that wore a mask as a necklace, was like the concept that I have. So think like a Jason style mask or like some kind of scary looking mask that you could put on, but it's just on a necklace around their neck. Unfortunately, the game did not have any mask pre-made accessories, which makes sense when you realize that every vampire has like this respirator that they're always wearing. And that plays into the lore of the game. Like the air is kind of toxic, and so you have to wear these respirators. So it makes sense that they wouldn't give you a bunch of masks because the respirators are your masks. Like Right. Everyone has to have a mask. It's just a very specific type. So I went in and I looked, and there were a bunch of kind of medals that you could pin on the character as some of the accessories. And one of them looked vaguely like tooth-like, and I turned it upside down and posted it, and the other looked kind of vaguely eye-like, and so I copied that and placed it and kind of made a makeshift mask with a tremendous amount of effort, was very proud of myself, and then promptly watched it get covered up. It's an NPC. except when you're at your home base area.
Right.
So I mentioned inconsistent depth of the character creator, and that is the weird thing. There are 500 different eyebrows you can choose from, but the respirators, these things that are like the iconic pieces of your character, there's less than 10. And so, you know, some of that's level of effort. An eyebrow is easier than this intricate respirator thing, but some of it is just, you know, I kind of scratch my head. I'm like, really? You didn't see fit to do more of that? So go figure on that front. You know, the accessory game and the hat game is out of this world, but there's really kind of four or five sets of clothing for a male presenting body and a female presenting body. Mm-hmm. And other than that, you don't get a lot of control. You get to pick one of the five and turn on and off a couple of accessory options or a couple like not accessory basic options for the outfit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. Maybe
that's weird.
Maybe there's like game specific, like animations for the respirator or something like that, where you can't just make like a default one.
Oh, there is. The game, there is some CSI Miami style respirator action going on where you're always wearing the mask, but when you do a cool backstab, you somehow off camera take off the mask just so you can put it back on right before you backstab someone. And so sunglasses have nothing on this. So that's a little wacky. And in general, I think the animations feel a bit unpolished. But that is, that's something that's easy to overlook when you're in the middle of the fray. This plays very, very much like a Bloodborne. Okay. I would put it, you know, From was not involved in this game. The developer was Shift, which did, I think, God Eater as their last big franchise game.
That did not stop Namco from marketing it from the very start like it was a Dark Souls.
It is. I mean, down to the types of items you get, down to the bonfires, missiles. That's M-I-S-T-L-E.
As a side note, this game does look like a Dead Eater, God Eater. God Eater.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. But the game, yeah, down to the items you get, the kind of conventions of the game, it is Dark Souls / Bloodborne as all get out. Mm-hmm. And on that spectrum, I would put it very much on the Bloodborne side, which is to its credit. You can jump into the fray a little more aggressively, and that's rewarded. And kind of being in the middle of a brawl with multiple enemies isn't the death sentence that it is in Dark Souls.
Right.
So you can afford a little bit of carelessness, which is good, because the big thing that sets it apart is, whereas in Dark Souls and Bloodborne, you could kind of inconsistently have a co-op partner. In this game, you, at least as far as I've played, always have a co-op partner. To date, computer-controlled, I imagine at some point it can be friend-controlled, but they will fight alongside you and are actually incredibly competent.
That's good.
They do a really good job kind of buying you the space you need to recover or to position. And in those moments when you've dove into the fray, your partner's dove in alongside you, and you're just, you know, wrecking up the place, it feels really good. And you feel like a badass. There have been plenty of deaths regardless, so don't worry about the difficulty. Like, you find yourself in tough spots. But I think the difficulty is balanced for a more aggressive style of gameplay that's alongside a partner.
Okay.
Yeah. There's the same kind of breadth of weapons to the game, where there's probably 15 plus different swords and axes and hammers and everything that I've picked up. I gravitated straight towards the bayonet, which is a rifle with a big ass, you guessed it, bayonet on it.
Okay.
It was for the reason that the character I was trying to create, I had in mind, is like a sniper type of character.
Yeah.
And that's been a lot of fun to play, but I've only found one of that type of weapon.
Oh,
And I don't know if it's meant to be more rare, or I've just been unlucky with drops. I've certainly fought a lot of enemies that have bayonets as well. Mm-hmm. But that kind of ranged combat, you still do a lot of hack and slashing with it, but your heavy attack is a ranged attack. And that plays really well. I don't know. I haven't looked to see if the community consensus is like bayonet is easy mode or anything like that. But it's been fun, and it has all those kind of hallmark Soulsborne feel to it.
How's the boss game? Is it on point?
I have fought two so far. I like it. It's got the same hallmark kind of like, hey, this hits like a truck. It is going to surprise you, but it will never be unfair to you kind of setup.
Yeah.
The one thing that is actually a disappointment in boss fights is your partner. And it's just because they're a little too competent. So on the second boss that I faced, I was kind of down for the count. I had been knocked out and was basically just like, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
I have no idea how I'm going to finish. Oh, wait, hey, it's finished. Well, yeah. Thanks, Lewis. Like, thanks, dude. That was cool.
Yeah, no, like, it's a Black Iron Tarkus and the Iron Golem. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he took off the final like 10th of the creature's health bar for me, mm-hmm. Which I don't know how I feel about that. Like we were talking about it in the Code Vein channel on Slack, and I was like, I was trying to learn how to parry, and I kept on trying to like bait out enemy attacks, and Lewis, my partner, would run up and kill him before they could actually
attack. I'm not going to learn if you keep doing this. Is there an item that, like, you can like expend to banish him for a fight or for a certain amount of time?
I think so. I haven't gone looking for it, because I think it would be too hard without him.
Yeah.
But I might experiment with that once I'm feeling a little more confident.
Yeah, go back and do content that you've done before with him that you've out-leveled, just so you can learn that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I made the analogy. It's like trying to learn how to drop in for the first time when Tony Hawk is in the half pipe next to you. And it's like, dude, I get it. Like, you're good, but could you stop doing 720s over me while I'm just trying to figure this thing out?
I mean, it's a good problem to have. Usually, you know, AI companions and games are dipshits. So
yeah,
this
yeah.
helps.
This is very true.
Yeah.
So that's enjoyable. The setting and the world I like a lot. The individual character barks, so, you know, this is, there's a lot more talking in this than there ever is in Dark Souls and Bloodborne.
Okay.
And I've been, it's inconsistent again, I guess, is what I would say. I've been impressed at the breadth of things that my partner has commented on. Mm-hmm. So like, all right, you're out of healing. Look, don't feel like you have to go for it. We can go back if you want. Or, you know, someone will come up and be, ah, there's a big enemy up there. We probably shouldn't attack while these smaller ones are still around.
Oh,
or,
wow.
You know, so it's a mix of like commentary on what you're doing, strategic commentary, little story bits, like kind of world lore of like, you know, oh, this used to be, used to be completely unpassable until the government fixed it up, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I've heard an incredible depth, but the number of times where I've opened my menu and he goes, oh, I should probably check my gear too, is getting a little too high for comfort. So it's like, okay, I'm glad you've got a ton of barks. Maybe just don't use this specific one so much.
Yeah. Can I downvote a bark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need a ranking system there. but yeah, it's fun. It's fun to like finish a fight by the skin of your teeth and to have him be like, man, we barely made it through that one. Or like,
man, we just finished that by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a positive mark that oftentimes he'll say what I'm thinking.
Right. Yeah. No,
that's well done on their part.
Yeah. Usually the mark for good dialogue for me. If the character says something right as I personally would say it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So a point of order, I pulled up the Wikipedia article on this game to try to figure out what the hell it's about. And I just love, like, the first or second sentence is, revenants, vampire-like beings, were created from dead humans. A.K.A. dead humans. Dead human-like beings were created from dead humans.
Well, and there is a bit of loading screen text that alludes to it's actually they were created by inserting a parasite into their heart that's, like, just barely reanimating you.
Okay, badass.
And a cool concept, but it is mentioned nowhere else in the game so far. And I'm early yet.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's this really like intricate or specific detail on the type of vampire you are, or like how you were created as a vampire. Yeah. That to date has had no
Medicorians.
Yeah. Exactly. So we'll see if it becomes more. They even have like an acronym for it, and I forget what the acronym was, but we'll see if that plays in further.
Yeah.
Just from the cover, I am judging the hell out of the bearskin cap, though. Like,
I'm a fan.
I'm not sure.
She also carries, I think, the weapon that I'm using, the bayonet.
Mm.
And also, apropos of nothing, I feel like, isn't a Bandai Namco, isn't that old, like, Mario knockoff? Was like Crash Bandai Namco.
You mean Bandicoot? No, it's two companies. Namco merged with Bandai. Yeah. So sorry. I'm sorry if I met your joke with an explanation.
I think you're thinking of Bandai and Kazooie.
Jesus Christ.
Also good.
I will just close by referencing this is the game where everyone dresses horny but no one acts horny.
Okay.
So it is not your Danganronpa style of horniness.
Right.
There is not an outfit in this game that does not require excessive amounts of fashion tape or body paint.
Okay.
That's the only logical explanation for what's going on, but everyone plays it completely straight. So
no.
There's no Monokuma to make it. Ugh.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
eyes on the prize if it's only aesthetically horny as opposed to narratively horny.
I mean, you know, it's a look and it's a theme that runs throughout the game. So I appreciate that, and I'm sure people get a little extra glee from it, but it seems it's not overtly gratuitous.
I feel like I should play this because it is in line with Bonfireside Chat. We're probably never going to cover it because Gary has come out against just the aesthetic. He's just like, I can't look at this. The particle effects in particular seem to really get in the way of the action. Like, just there's lots of other Souls likes that we would cover before this, but I'm curious about it. People seem to be, you know, super into it, and to hear you talk about it, I was like, yeah, this is a serviceable Dark Souls like that, you know, hits the right notes and has this cool angle of the companion character. It seems like it adds enough to be really interesting. So,
yeah. And I haven't gotten far enough to comment on the way like lore and storytelling and everything plays out in the games. I think at the very least, I can tell they are trying to Dark Souls it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they have people that can also voice over stuff and more overtly give you dialogue. Not that Dark Souls didn't, but they are, you know, there are more people in the game, more opportunities in the game to do that.
It's a less elliptical, less isolated game.
Yeah. So we'll see what that does for the storytelling, but I think that's probably for a future week.
Yeah.
I have not been streaming this, but I think I'm starting to get comfortable enough with it that I might. So keep an eye out for that. And that's really the only thing I've been playing. I've been playing World of Warcraft Classic, but basically I just log on, eat my rested XP like a good boy, and log off.
Sorry, that's you said that in a really upsetting way. I don't know if you know that.
Just, you know, you gotta. It's there. You gotta take advantage of it.
Yeah, I suppose.
Eat your vitamins.
Cool. So Code Vein. Nice. Let us see here. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got a weird one this week. So I think I'm regressing. I wanted to play video games this weekend, but I didn't really want to play Borderlands 3. And so I went back and played Arkham Knight and started a new run through of that.
Oh,
I only played through that game one time when it came out, and I think I beat it within like a week of playing it. Yeah, it's still a good game. I don't know. I feel weird playing it. It's just like, I don't know. There's just nothing else out right now that I want to play. And I guess I'm still waiting for The Outer Worlds, which comes out later in October.
It comes out in 25 days as of the time we're recording. Not that anybody's counting.
Yeah. Who would do that? So this is, I guess, what's filling that void for me right now.
I gotcha. Yeah. Is that the Arkham game besides Origins that you play the least?
I suppose so, yeah, because I think I went back and played Arkham Asylum and Arkham City and beat those like two or three times each.
Yeah.
Whereas Arkham Knight, I just did it straight through and was like, yeah, that's good, and just stopped. So, yeah.
What's sticking out to you this time about it?
I mean, it just holds up. I mean, the game's, 5 years old now, I think?
God, don't say that.
I know, right?
I don't want you to say that at all.
There's like no news of what they're doing next still.
I know, right? We thought they were doing the Avengers thing, but nope.
Yeah.
I feel like what they're doing is having all the money.
I mean, like Batman Arkham Knight was really, really troubled. I don't know that they're, I don't know if they made all the stuff.
So one thing I thought about. I remember their criticisms of the game when it came out that people really hated the Batmobile in it. I think it's totally fine.
I didn't care for it, but yeah, it's fine.
I thought they.
See, the main thing I remember hearing is just that it's even more so than the game otherwise is. It's blatant that you're killing people.
Yeah. Yeah, you shoot them with a suppression round that from a tank. <It's>
like, oh, Jesus.
I don't know. Like, is that a hang up for? I haven't met anybody who that's an actual hang up for. You know, like the same thing with a Spider-Man game. You punch people off roofs, and it's like, okay, it's a game. You know what I mean?
So the killing people didn't bother me. There are two things that bugged me. Like the Batmobile stuff, I feel like they were really in love with that mechanic, and I felt like that displaced like more cool exploring buildings kind of play. Like that was at its height when you were going back and forth and kind of treating the Batmobile like it was, I don't know, that Luck Dragon thing from The Last Guardian, right? Where, you had to get in and out of it and use the Batmobile to progress through a building. I thought that was cool. But like racing around the city and shooting stuff, and especially like later on, all of the combat arenas where the mission was just, I don't know, shoot a bunch of dudes and kill a bunch of drones for about 10 minutes until the story decides that you can move on. I just thought that was decidedly uncool.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, I could see that argument then.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me as much. It is kind of weird, I guess, now that you bring it up, that it is like this kind of like abstract Geometry Wars type game that's kind of stuck in the Batman game, you know?
Right.
It's like dodge lasers and then shoot things, you know? I mean, I enjoyed it, so it didn't bother me too much. And that's also like the first upgrade I had was like the reload time of the tank. I don't know anyone. There's two fires on the tank. There's like the machine gun and then there's the tank blasting part. And like, you can't really get the job done with a machine gun on any of the drones, so I just upgrade the reload time, like, as the first thing that I do. So,
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I can voice the other thing that sure. that bugged me, again, back in the day, I've only played this once, etc. Like, the overall story was cool and good. Like, some Scarecrow stuff is, you know, my jam. Like, mm-hmm. that's fine. However, the things that you ended up having to do felt very uninspired to me. Like, from a motivation standpoint, it was very much, hey, you need to get to this uplink and get the data or stop the data from going through.
Yeah,
was just kind of the pattern. Like, that was the reason that you're going forward, as opposed to in previous games where it was like, oh, Mr. Freeze, he's fucking this up over here and you need to stop it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it felt more chorey a
little bit. Yeah
gotcha. Okay.
Yeah,
that's fair.
You know, but just only because you asked for the issues, it feels
like. No. Yeah.
And I don't want to rain on your parade for that, but like, that's why it sticks out to me. I'm happy you're having a good time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the story, I remember like the main beats of it and the main twists of it, which I won't say, mm-hmm. but, it's still good. Like, I don't know. For the most part, like, I enjoy like the storyline of it and the motivation of Batman for most of the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is definitely a game to tide me over until other stuff comes out, but yeah. It's still, I mean, to be honest, TBH, I'm finding it more fun of an experience than playing Borderlands 3. So I need to play that more, I guess, before I like lay solid judgment on it. But I don't know.
It says a lot if you're not motivated to, you know, to take more bites out of it.
You don't owe it a second or third chance.
Right.
Yeah. It's already had three.
I read like a real bummer story, and you know, keep on playing it if you want to, but like, apparently Gearbox decided, no, we're not going to use union voice actors, and that's why they couldn't get Troy Baker back for it. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, screw you.
And now need to find a new brief.
I'm sorry, we can talk about that later.
No, that's fine. I actually had several other ones.
Oh, gotcha.
Well, that is in a game that, in its very like premise for the bad guys, tries to make some sort of enlightened social commentary.
I know, right?
So. See, I feel like, though, actually, I think on the whole, that story was actually kind of inspiring, because, you know, I was reading the comments for, you know, the Polygon article, because I'm an idiot, but... spectacularly, they actually brought up a good point, which was Baker probably could have gotten, you know, the union to let him do it if he had wanted to. Most likely he didn't do it because he wanted to make it, you know, explicitly because he didn't want to go outside the union.
I mean, yeah, he doesn't want to be a scab. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for all the great stuff that I said about Resident Evil 2, like, it kills me that they, you know, because of a strike, they had to use scabs for the voice actors. Like,
yeah. I did not know that.
Solidarity, man. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. That is neither here nor there. I'm sorry that I took your brief.
You mean my brief? Oh, yeah.
Is that all you have, Ben?
That's all I have.
Batman Arkham Knight. David, how about you?
Sure. So, I've picked up a early access game on Steam called Hellsign, which is really interesting. I think this is probably the first game I've seen where like Steam's whatever like evil machine learning algorithms definitely had my number.
Okay.
It's basically kind of the whole premise of the game is that it's a, you know, vampire / demon / ghost, whatever, you know, kind of hunting game that explicitly revolves around replicating kind of the like research and investigation aspects that you see in something like Supernatural.
Okay.
So basically, you know, in a given level, you'll be at some like haunted house and, you have to first, gather what are called signs, which basically you have a electromagnetic field, detector a like directional microphone, a thermal camera to like detect cold spots, and then a black light in order to like follow blood trails.
Okay.
And you basically have to go around and, you know, find these, you know, various signs. And then, you know, once you collect them, you open up your Cryptonomicon and, look up, you know, for the various types of signs. You have to, you know, look and match them to entries in the, your guidebook. So, this signs can be things like blood splatters, different chemical structures of ectoplasm, different waveforms of audio recording, stuff like that. And so you'll have to then go and match them to figure out like what characteristic of the poltergeist you're facing indicates they have.
Huh. This sounds badass as all hell. I don't need to stop you.
Is it co-op or is it single player?
Single player. So
okay, I was going to say, because if you're playing with someone who's like knows it all already, that would be a real letdown.
Although, to be fair, like you don't have any way of knowing, because like, you know, the like at the point where I am, the enemy could either be a banshee, a kelpie, or a shadow. Are the three types of enemies. And then they, for their first trait, there's like four different options. For the second trait, there's additional four. So like you still like would have to at least go through the trouble of gathering everything, even if you already know basically how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And then
guys, there is a mechanic for highlighting text in this game. This is a David ass game.
Yep.
It's a cool ass game. It's like your modern day Witcher. This is great.
Yeah. And my favorite feature with that also is when you do it, you then like wherever you highlight, you note down on sticky notes. And so then when you then like, all right, it's time to fight the boss, you know, go back to your van, cargo van to like get your inventory set up. It then displays all the sticky notes that you've written down, like exactly what equipment you want to use.
God.
Nice.
This sounds so good.
Yeah. So, so there are some flaws. Like it very much, it sounds like you guys are, you know, looking at it, so you probably have this idea, but just for the viewers or listeners or whatever, I guess you don't view a podcast.
You could, it would just be very boring.
Yeah. You know, It would be
a little hash. Website. Yeah,
the hash is moving to the right.
Yeah, but you could put it in like an iTunes or a Winamp visualizer, and I don't know, pop some edibles, chill. Exactly. Hey, the cops are coming.
Basically, it's a top down. You know, one of the games, sort of like all the Aliens style games that have been made, where it's you know. Top-down shooter with twin stick shooter with a big emphasis on the fact that you know it's almost completely dark and so you only have your flashlight beam facing the direction you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similarly, enemies tend to you know a number of them have at least like semi. You know, like unique mechanics. So, just things like, I don't know, certain enemies. There's one enemy that's basically like a possessed painting that sends out tentacles at you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, the whole thing is subverting the fact that, you know, paintings are one of the main things you need to, like check with your various meters. So it's you know fairly intelligent. The downsides of it, I would say, is one, it's definitely not finished yet, which to be fair, it's early access.
Right.
It's incredibly, incredibly difficult. In particular early on.
Is it just that you can die really easily, or?
Yeah, you can die really easily, and
so the highlighter runs out of ink, so it's really hard to highlight.
exactly, and then you have to go to Office Max.
Wait 2 in-game days for Amazon Prime to drop off a new bulk order.
Guys, I want to play a game in a haunted Office Max now.
I mean, yeah.
It's basically it's one of the mechanics is the fact that you can leave at any point with whatever signs you've found so far and like sell those on the black market.
Okay.
And the game's like very explicit about it. One of the characters describes it as basically being crowdsourced ghost hunting. It's basically like the gig economy for demon hunting.
It's Buster, B-U-S-T-R is the name of the app.
But because of that, like, it's very much until you've upgraded your basic gear, you're by far the correct way to do it is just like run in, find anything, and then get out, because there's a good chance you won't survive more than one or two fights.
Hmm.
The other thing that's kind of frustrating, which in some ways is a feature I like because it kind of supports the horror side of it, but on the other hand, it's really annoying, is when you run out of ammo, you don't automatically reload.
Oh, geez.
Which is nice because it kind of simulates, you having to be careful, not to panic and, just keep trying to fire an empty gun.
Yeah.
The problem is the guns have fairly long reload animations. And if you do any sort of like dodge or sprint or get knocked down or anything like that, it interrupts it. And so I fairly routinely don't have think I've reloaded my gun, I actually haven't, or just can't reload my gun because I keep needing to dodge or get getting interrupted, things like that. So but again, it's it's early access, so the other thing, both as a I guess as kind of an interesting thing and as a little bit of a warning, it's set in Australia and is very much in Australia, leans into that. It's a significant portion of the cryptids you are fighting basically boil down to giant spiders because Australia.
Okay. So arachnophobia warning.
Yeah. also related to that though, I've been told that this is like a difference in usage of language between Australia and the U.S. But
oh boy, are we running up to the C word here? Or?
It's used extremely commonly.
Gotcha. Mm. Yeah.
Is that a thing? Apparently,
yeah. It's a thing. I mean, it is crass, but it's just a way to say dude, kind of.
Yeah, I really like that word, actually, that it has a really negative connotation in one country, and it's like a pretty harmless connotation in another one.
Yeah.
Not many words like that.
One of the worst words you can say in America, and just de rigueur in other countries that used to be under the crown. Yeah. Oh, that's worth it.
I can't figure out is whether it actually, I haven't checked whether it's actually made by an Australian team, most notably because
they just really wanted to use the word
cultural appropriation.
Oh, I just figured if you're going to create a game about like literally everything trying to kill you, Australia was like the obvious choice.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, because you definitely use like all the drugs.
Okay. Huh. Maybe it doesn't need to be rated because it's an indie game.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I don't know is like the you know, the main drug, like once you you know, get some experience, is basically like epinephrine. And so I don't know if they, you know, that doesn't quote unquote count.
Yeah.
And then also like the crappy starter version of that is, you know, a like nondescript injectable street drug. So maybe just the fact that they're completely nondescript about what, you know, what a common injectable street drug that would, you know,
I mean,
cause you to be able to withstand extreme pain might be.
It's possible. I mean, Fallout 3 was able to come out there. So,
yeah. So that's just kind of weird, but yeah. So overall, it's one of those games that, like, I really, really like, and, you know, I really appreciate what it's doing. Strictly speaking, like, if I was doing a review, I couldn't recommend it.
That's really released. Yeah, you know, we've got time.
Yeah, well, and yeah, it's still super shaky, but I still kind of recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, as long as people know what they're walking into.
Exactly.
Yeah. The fact sheet on their website, on the developer's website, says they are based in Australia. So, okay. And I guess the release date that they have planned is November 9th. So I don't know. Is there a front to back story, or are these missions just kind of put together on the fly?
There is a story. You know, I haven't quite seen kind of the plot line. Apparently is that, you know, you wake up with amnesia because video games. And you have this like massive tattoo on your back.
Okay.
It turns out that's you know, something called a hell sign, which what I've been able to gather so far is that it's fairly common for like monster hunters to have them. However, it's also something that's like looked down upon within the Monster Hunter community.
Huh? Does it give you an edge?
Well, and it appears to be like when you die, this like demonic voice basically says like you can't die, still have use for you, and you then like. You know, within universe that you actually die, but then somehow find yourself back in your safe house.
Oh yeah.
And also one of the characters apparently comments. Apparently, it somehow allows you to travel to the shadow dimension.
Okay.
Which is like some of the enemies are shadow creatures, although it's not clear yet, like what that means, if anything.
Okay. Huh.
So, yeah. So, like, it has a plot in that, like, you're trying to figure that out and, like, piece together the various things. Other than that, not much.
Like, the jobs are going on or are procedurally generated.
Yes. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. I gotta say, this sounds really cool.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. It's definitely a great idea. Yeah. It, a little bit, you know, not at all in terms of like the actual mechanics, but in terms of the feeling, it reminds me of, you know, my favorite parts of like the Soulsborne games are kind of the dungeon crawling aspects.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. And the hell sign in their logo reminds me of the yellow sign, and that's always good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way that they spell hell sign kind of looks like it says Heil IGN. I don't know how
I feel about it. Oh, they're just
Well, it's also just incredibly bad search engine optimization, because basically if you do it, you will get nothing but hits for the Helsing anime.
I was going to ask. Is
excellent anime.
I was going to ask if you clicked on it because you thought it was a Helsing game.
I mean, I would definitely be tempted to, because that is a great series, but but yeah, no.
Yeah. I know you like that anime. Yeah. Is that all for you, David?
Yeah. I'm continuing on Warframe, but you know, nothing really particularly noteworthy.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I'll do mine. I've got two. One is new. The other is something that I've talked about last week. The new one is I streamed over the weekend, and Ben, you were there for part of this. I streamed the new game by the developer of Until Dawn. The game is called Man of Medan or Man of Medan.
Oh, that looks really interesting.
Yeah. So this is, people a while back will remember that I talked about the announcement. This is the start of a new thing for this studio where they're putting out kind of an anthology series. It's called the Dark Pictures Anthology. This is the first entry. I think that they have 8 planned, but who knows if they're going to get through all of those. And the next one is coming out sometime in 2020. There's even a trailer at the end of this one for that game, which looks really cool. It has to do with witches. It's called Little Hope. It's named after a town called Little Hope, which is fun. But Man of Medan, this is an interactive drama game similar to Until Dawn, similar to games by David Cage, Telltale Games. There's some DNA for that here. And I dig it with all of its janky, goofy, over and underacted, over and under animated charm.
Was the previous game in this series as, gamified as this one is?
Define gamified for me.
I guess what I mean is my understanding is that various characters have like faction with each other and like various personality trait stats and things like that, where like it's not strictly a choose your own adventure type of thing.
It's still basically a choose your own adventure kind of thing. I never got to a point where characters' traits or relationships with each other, which is what those, which is what those mechanics are tracking. I never got to a point where those relationships or stats blocked me off of content. That all kind of shaded different reactions and different dialogue choices that people had. That said, there could be stuff under the hood. And I think that part of the goal of that kind of system is to keep you railroaded without actually making you feel like you are railroaded, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know at least one of the comments that I saw, and I don't know if this was like a developer or just, speculation or something, but someone saying that, if you potentially based on like your relationship with some of the other characters, there could be a scenario where you could like fail a quick time sequence and the other character would intervene to like save you.
That seems plausible. Yeah.
I know that stuff definitely came up in Until Dawn.
Yeah. It's really similar to Until Dawn, to answer your first question, David.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, Until Dawn's big thing was butterfly effect. It would let you know by the interface if a decision kind of had, cascaded.
Broader implications,
Yeah. If it would affect something
Chloe
later.
We will remember that.
Pretty much, playing into the Telltale kind of thing. That's replicated here. I don't know if it's going to have a different thing for other games, but here it's called Bearing, and it kind of plays into the fact that you're playing on boats. It's difficult to talk about a lot of the content of this because, it does really cool stuff with plot and twist, just like Until Dawn did, but, I don't want to spoil that. It's a 5-hour
game. Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, the camera work in this game is really, really good.
I don't know that I noticed that in particular. What context did you see that in, Dennis?
Just in terms of tell me if I'm wrong. The camera is like fixed perspective a lot of time, a la older horror games, but they just use that to really good effect. Or like, as you're moving up, you'll kind of realize what you're looking at in different ways or looking through in different ways.
Yeah.
That play well.
I would say that. I think that it also helps that you spend 2/3 of the game on a big rusted like military tanker kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a good environment for horror. What were you going to say, Ben?
Oh, I was going to ask the runtime, but you answered it as I was asking it. It's 5 hours, you said?
Yeah, just about. I think that it can go longer or shorter, depending on if everybody dies, which is absolutely a possibility, just like in Until Dawn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the concept, just, you know, real bare bones. You're playing as a group of like college students or, you know, young professionals who are taking a diving trip out in French Polynesia, so Pacific Ocean, going to look for a wrecked World War II plane that nobody has gone down to before. You are boarded by pirates, and very quickly a storm happens, and all of you are trapped on a tanker where incredibly spooky stuff is happening, and you have to find the explanation and try to escape. I don't know who the man of Medan is. I found a sailor's cap or a captain's cap that had the word Medan written on it, but
what about the frame story? Because that was actually the part that kind of interested me the most.
So this is pretty cool. Because this is an anthology, they have a framing device, which is this pretty aggressive British man who lives in a library, and he pulls down a book, and he is like not narrating the story to you, but the framing kind of construction is he's saying like, hey, I'm going to tell you a story, but the story isn't finished. You need to finish it yourself. It's very much like a Tales from the Crypt, Crypt Keeper kind of thing, to the point where like at the end of his scenes, I would play a Crypt Keeper laugh when I was streaming it. You know, I just had that sound queued up and played it at particular times.
Also, I did not realize. I assumed he was the man of Medan.
No. He is the host or presenter. I think the actual word he uses for himself is the curator for the for the entire series. Yeah. There are rough edges, to be sure. You know, some of the acting is either way too overstated or way too understated. Animations are kind of awkward, you know, as you are walking around in these just uncanny valley androids, you know, some very stiff kind of stuff. Certain characters are animated better than others. Some dialogue lines, you know, land and some definitely don't. Some thud. However, you know, even with that inconsistency, Ben, a word that you used in the chat, is something that I had that I latched onto really early on, which is it's really campy.
Yeah. You
know? So like
that's like a positive thing, I think, in this case.
Yeah. You know, especially like, you know, because this is mining, you know, B-movie tropes, and it is playing itself off like a, you know, Tales from the Crypt kind of thing. Like, that's super endearing. And I don't, you know, I can look past bad stuff when it is having a negative effect most of the time. And when it makes stuff funnier than Yahtzee, you know, like, I don't know if you meant for that to be for laughs. you know, and all of this would be for naught if the, you know, if it didn't have the scares and the spooks to back it up. Like, there's some really cool horror ideas and really cool, like, visual gags, for lack of a better word, visual scares that work pretty great. And the twist is really good in this one. And like, all of it says like, yeah, like when the next one comes out, I'm going to buy it and play it and stream it. Like, it's just good. Yeah.
See, at least to me, like with the kind of Tales of the Crypt Keeper type of thing, one of the big things I associate with is there usually being a twist, like you said, and it usually being something that incorporated either kind of like, you know, moralism or, you know, irony or, you know, not just a twist of like, OMFG, it was vampires all along, but like, you know, actually something kind of ironic or, something like that. Does it get kind of that sort of thing?
Mildly. I'm going to abstain from further comment.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that I have anything in addition to that. Or to elaborate on that. Something that's good, you know, I try to stay away from talking about, you know, dollar per value, you know, the value per hour or whatever. But like, it's $30 as the base price, and I imagine it's gonna drop down like $30 for like a really, you know, what amounts to, you know, two feature length movies that you can interact with. And maybe play over again to see the different ways they can articulate. Like, I had a lot of fun after I was done, like going and reading, in different articles or like the TV tropes, looking to see like different ways things could have gone. And even as I was playing it, there was somebody in the chat who had played it before and was generally dismissive of the game, but was remarking on like, oh yeah, this went entirely differently for me, or this scene's cool, or you missed this kind of cool thing. Like, apparently there is a good amount of variance. And there's probably a discussion to be had about like, so like, yeah, like ultimately how much do the decisions matter? It's still going to take you to roughly the same scenes and, you know, the climax is going to be pretty similar, but like, I don't know. The point is the story, and if the point is the actual details of the interactions, like if that's what it is, like that feels meaningful to me, even if it is going to hit a lot of the same marks, you know, if you are shaping these characters and you are making choices that are going to allow even very, you know, even inconsequential things to change. I don't know. That still feels good and satisfying to me.
It seems like from what I've seen, at least the production values seem at least near AAA. You know, it sounds like maybe there's some rough edges, but mm-hmm. you know, it definitely seems like it's not like, you know, sometimes you get kind of the indie jank.
Yeah. I would say this is closer to indie jank than AAA, but neither of like that doesn't bother me. So
sure.
I am not the right person to like to prosecute that case. Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's sweet that they're making shorter stories if that allows them to do more variants with like what you can choose to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for something story driven, unless it's explicitly you want to use length as a device, I feel like shorter is almost always the way to go.
Oh, especially with horror, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the time to make you inured to it. And even something like, I don't know, like It is a, you know, an exceptionally long horror book, but it is also made up of these little episodic you know, scare chapters. You know, it is paced like a season of television. But broadly, yes. The shorter the length for horror, the better.
So on something just very tangentially related, have you messed around at all with Dark Deception?
No.
That looks like kind of an interesting take on the horror stuff.
Let me see here. I've not heard of this. What is it? It's can you give me a
So basically the premise is it's you know, kind of a little bit anthology, you know, kind of a series of levels. In each of them you're being chased by you know, some type of monster, and you have to collect you know, crystals and whatever and get out. Kind of its weird thing is it's sort of combining, you know, chase mechanics with the levels explicitly being like mazes. So it seems like it's kind of a game that compresses kind of the actual chase aspect of like a
like an Amnesia.
Yeah, exactly. To you know, having that be the entire thing, sort of like how Shadow of the Colossus has, you know, boss fight being the entire thing.
Yeah, I shared a screenshot. I shared a screenshot from the Steam that spooked me. Yeah. The symbols monkey that comes after you. I don't know. It might be worth streaming.
Yeah. It, honestly, from what I've seen, it seems like to me like the perfect streaming game. Just because, like, from what I can tell, it's, you know, it's episodic. Like each thing is very self-contained, very fast. But
yeah. Neat. Any other questions about Man of Medan?
I'm glad you liked it. Oh, do you have any inkling if you said it's an anthology game, right? If the worlds intersect in any kind of way?
So a little bit. Like the next game has a like a witch, you know, witchcraft kind of theme to it. And one of your characters one of the characters wears a t-shirt from Salem, Oregon. Not Salem, Oregon. Fuck me. I'm all over the place here. From Salem, Massachusetts. And one of the mechanics from the game is that you can look at paintings in the world and get like little hints, like little premonitions of ways future scenes can pan out. One of them that I saw was explicitly like a hint for what will happen in the next game. It was it was characters that I had no idea. It was locations that I had never seen. So it seems like there is a little bit of overlap, which is nice.
Paintings in horror games is the theme of this episode here.
I think so.
So now we're going to talk about Layers of Fear.
No, now we're going to talk about Link's Awakening, which I don't have an awful lot else to say about. I think I said my piece last week.
I still maintain that's secretly a horror game.
It's an existential horror game. I'm having an amazing time with it. Like those classic Zelda dungeons are like just the right length to play about one a day. So I like right before I played, I did the dungeon where you get the hookshot, and I don't know, like the point where you get a hookshot in a Zelda game is always my favorite part. Like that is the most, that is the most empowering weapon, or tool that you can get.
Is Ocarina of Time your favorite Zelda since you get it twice?
I mean, it's not my favorite Zelda is Majora's Mask. But
you get an infinite number of times.
Yep, just over and over again. Yeah. But yeah, I just got that. Two things about this. I'm going to say the two things now, and you can hold me to account to sticking to them. The two things are their commitment to making this a thorough recreation. It continues to amaze me. And the second thing is, this is what I want enhanced graphical fidelity to do. All right. Really? I'm going to stay to those two things. Number one, the commitment to recreating the original product, or at least the product that existed in the Game Boy generation. Something that I didn't expect them to do was bring over the extra content that was added for the Game Boy Color version of the game. So the original Link's Awakening came out on the original Game Boy, you know, had the 8 dungeons or what have you, and then it was finished. When it came out on the Game Boy Color, it was Link's Awakening DX, and they added, obviously they colorized the game and it looked really attractive at the time, but they also added a whole new dungeon that you could go through that had color-dependent puzzles that you had to do and color-dependent enemies. And it felt fairly gimmicky, but you got a cool reward at the end, which is you got to choose a different color tunic that either halved the damage you took or doubled the damage that you dealt. If you didn't take the double the damage that you dealt, you were literally a cop. but you know, it felt a little bit gimmicky and I didn't expect them to bring it through. So when I got the Pegasus boots and I dashed at the shelf in the library and knocked the book down, I was really surprised to see them talking about the power of color, etc. They brought that gimmicky dungeon forward into this remake, and it's exactly like cool. I remembered it. You know, it's fun. Like, it's a whole new dungeon that you can do. Like, I'm happy to have more content than less. And it is not necessarily like, you know, as groundbreaking that you have color based puzzles in this game, because, you know, it's the Switch and it looks nice. But like, again, they continue. Remember last week I talked about like, oh, you could totally steal stuff from the store if you wanted to change your file. Just to see that they are, you know, really devoted and very workmanlike about bringing forward all of the stuff that you might have good memories of, and that it still works, makes me feel incredibly good. This is hitting the spot in a way that I really appreciate.
Cool.
The other thing is that this is a very beautiful game. I alluded to, you know, the diorama kind of style that this has, the tilt shift, kind of low depth of field aesthetic that it uses to make it look really good. That continues. I just continue to be really blown away by how good this game looks, and it's using a lot of shaders, and it's using technology not to pursue photorealism and not to make things overly intricate, but to pick an aesthetic and hue to it. It looks like this is a toy set, and I am super happy with what they have done to consistently re-cement that aesthetic. And it gets nothing but a big thumbs up for me. And I will always, if given the choice between technical, you know, technical whiz bangery or, a general aesthetic principle, well executed, I will always go with the latter rather than the former. And this is a good, this is an incredibly good case study in that, I think.
Nice. How much more of the game do you have to go?
I don't know, like 2/3 of the way through. So okay. I'll probably be done by the time we record next week. I don't know how much new I will have to say about it at that point. I'll probably be moved on to like Untitled Goose Game or something like that. But
oh yeah,
yeah. No, no. The memes are out in force. So yeah. Any questions about Link's Awakening?
Mm-mm.
All right.
Glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we usually we ask you a question and then you answer it. But we decided to do a free play multiplayer this week. We did not do one last time. That means that the tables are turned and you ask us the questions. I'll proctor this and I'll get us started here with Ollie, who asks, is there a genre of game that you've always been really interested in but haven't gotten around to playing? I ask because I'm looking at Final Fantasy VII on my shelf. It's been unplayed for 22 years now. If you have no attachment to it and you've had it for 22 years and it's unplayed and in good condition, sell that. Just buy a digital copy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, it sounded like you had something.
Well, I was just going to say, if you are indicating through Final Fantasy that you haven't played an entire genre of like JRPGs, that's a lot to miss.
Yeah, it is.
Let's see. Yeah, for me, I think the game that comes to mind is like EVE Online.
Oh, like
that,
yeah.
Spreadsheets in space kind of game. I would say that was me as a genre, except I've sunk a fair amount of time into No Man's Sky.
Right.
But I think more the grindy, like economic manipulation side of those sim games.
Yeah.
Is a piece. Like I've never been one to be like, oh, the auction house is selling gold bars low today, so I'll load up for next week. They always go down around Christmas, and I'll, you know, like that's cool. I like the idea of that. I just have never gotten into it.
Yeah, playing intergalactic drug wars.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I'll say no is my answer.
It's unsatisfying, but I've got to say, yeah, like I also. So continue.
Yeah. Sorry. but thank you for giving me the out.
Yeah. Like for me, like I was going to say something like fighting games or what have you. But like I've played the fighting games that I'm interested in. Like there's just nothing that I haven't touched, you know, and like maybe like hypothetically there is something that I'm really curious about, but and haven't really jumped into. But I've at least taken a cursory interest in I've at least touched the stuff I've taken a cursory interest in to confirm whether or not it's worth pursuing.
I was going to say, just talked about playing
Soul Calibur fan, right?
I liked it a lot in the arcade and on Dreamcast, but I never went too far into like the sequels and stuff. How about you, David?
I picked A Poor Time for an Oreo. Who even knew it could be such a thing? I think for me, probably racing games. I know I've talked about this in the past, but I think it's would be interesting to see. I've always, something I'm kind of interested in is like, you know, every so often there'll be, you know, some, article or talk about like not Terraria, Subnautica, you know, was made to explicitly be like a game without guns, which kind of doesn't work because if you read the backstory, that's a society that really could use them. But yeah, like the idea of like, what would, gaming have to look like for me, for there to be a game that I actually like that wasn't violent. And I feel like potentially racing games could have that for me in terms of, you know, being something that has the, you know, an action-y feel and potentially could have like character customization, character building, RPG elements.
Yeah.
I think the problem for me is that probably similar to fighting games where there are game genre I should really like, but the problem is just my views on like what a game should be are so diametrically opposite of what the fandom's views are. You know, in both cases, just them being the idea that, like, the game should be, I guess, fair or competitive or whatever.
Right, right.
So, yeah, so I'd say that's both the genre I've always meant to be playing, or, you know, always wanted to be playing, and the reason I probably haven't.
I gotcha. Makes sense to me.
I right. will say that about twice a year I go on Craigslist and look for racing wheels. I don't have a specific racing game in mind. I just feel like I'd enjoy a game with a racing wheel. Particularly if really it was one that supported VR.
I really want to build, I found online, what do they call them, like racing racing sim rigs or whatever.
Yeah, I get like a bucket seat and get a, you know, work a shifter in and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mainly, I actually want that to, like, you know, build my actual, like, programming desk around that, mm-hmm. mainly because I, you know, read and watched way too much cyberpunk as a young man. but also because I think it'd be fun to do that. Also, Microsoft Flight Sim is being a new expansion soon, so I would have kind of an excuse.
Yeah, yeah. Just work it into, this is my sim pod.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher writes, what is your favorite film, book, game, or TV show that involves time travel? Ben, it seems like you would have an opinion on this.
Yes. I want to back up and retcon my first one, though. I do want to play VR games, but I have not taken the plunge into doing that.
So that is
the genre.
I got you.
You gotta come hang out, man.
Yeah, it's getting there. as for favorite piece of media that involves time travel, I'm going to go with The Fountain is one of my favorite movies of all time. And that kind of has time travel in it. So we'll say that applies.
Is that Tarsem directed that?
No, that's The Fall. The Fountain is Darren Aronofsky.
Gotcha. I got that mixed up.
They're both good movies, though.
Yeah, I like The Fall quite a bit. We went to see that the Esquire, didn't we?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. For me, let's say Steins Gate. Just because the time travel is incredibly interesting to me, the way that it articulates. How about you, Dennis?
Yeah, I had a TV show jump directly to mind that plays with the way you understand time, but it's not time travel per se. So I don't know if that disqualifies. It's also like a significant reveal when you understand how it's playing with time.
Gotcha. You can pass if you want.
Well, I would say since I have kids, I'll go Meet the Robinsons instead.
Okay. It's about the scientist family. Yeah. How about you, David?
This is killing me because, like, you know, time travel is a plot element I really, really like. So I'm sure there's going to be something that's going to come to me.
First thing, gun to your face. What do you you can save one piece of time travel media from obliteration?
Sure. So I'd say probably.
The secrets of time travel, so I can go back and save every piece of time travel.
You're giving him more time.
I think probably the first two the only two Terminator movies.
Very good. Yeah.
Which presumably, if I could time travel, I could prevent the other Terminator movies from being made.
Should make a meta Terminator movie.
you're the Terminator. You go back in time to kill the bad Terminator movies.
You go forward in time to kill the Terminators before they can be sent back in time.
You have to kill James Cameron before Avatar or Titanic. Your choice.
Oh, jeez.
Popular mention, Homestuck.
Okay, yeah.
Good stuff, and one that I have come to despise is Doctor Who, just because the guy who writes for that is a crank.
Oh,
it's British. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see here. Dan writes, if you had a choice, what would you choose for a remaster? Why and what console? David, I'm going to go to you.
Okay. First thing that came to mind was probably Stalker.
Okay.
And what console? I'd say definitely PC. Mm-hmm. And why? A couple of things. One, I think the way it handles AI, it still probably has the best AI of any game I've ever played by far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The dog pack kind of mechanics.
Just the fact that like all of the AI in the game is being being simulated even when you're not nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I'd like to see other games pick up, so that'd be another option to do it. The other thing is, and this is an original idea, I think I read this in a review or something, but it's a good point. One of the problems is the third game in the series, Call of Pripyat? I have no idea how that's pronounced.
Yeah, Pripyat.
Is basically like the Stalker games if they like got their act together and made a like AAA quality version of Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that really the original Stalker was like the story they had to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two games, the second one is like what happened before the actual story. And then the third game is what happened after. So neither of them, you know, it's a lot like the Dragonlance world where like the innate problem with the stories is the entire universe was set up to tell one story.
Right, right. Yeah. How about you, Ben? And is the answer Knights of the Old Republic?
That crossed my mind, but I think the game's still fine enough as it is. I don't know if a remake would like really be that much of a leap. I was going to say Vice City, I think, would be an awesome remaster.
Yeah.
Especially if you had like an updated engine from Rockstar. I think that would be really sweet.
It's a good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was for some reason, I was in the mood to listen to In the Air tonight, yesterday, and that made me think about Vice City. So must be in the air tonight.
When you think of that game, do you think of Perpetual Sunset?
Yeah. It's a great aesthetic. I don't know that I'd ever go back and play that game again, but you know, they really nailed the feel of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
I would say CTR, but they just did that. I have to go, you know, forward a little bit in time and say the Jack series.
Gotcha.
That got an HD like version, I think, not too long ago.
Well, PS3.
But I would love to say, I would love to see like a true update of it.
Yeah. And I will say the original Silent Hill because I am a parody of myself. Yeah.
That'd be sweet though.
Yeah, not to answer yours for you, but I feel like it would be cool to see more of those games do kind of the Resident Evil 2 thing where they kind of updated the gameplay a lot, but in a way that was sort of like
faithful.
There's a line, you know, SCA, the Society for Creative Anachronism, LARPer, you know, medieval nerd thing and
Ren Faire kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and like one of their motto is, you know, their version of like historical accuracy is like the past as it should have been.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of like what they nailed with that, where it's like, you know, they got the soul of, you know, what the game was about without worrying about like whether it was one to one, whatever.
Yeah, no, your mouth to God's ear. I would hope if they ever, you know, if Konami ever gets their act together, or you know, or if they sell the license and somebody who made it, you know, brought it forward, that they would do that. Would be my desire too. Let's hear. Casey writes, "It's breakfast for dinner. What are you having?" So if it is breakfast in the AM, I do not eat sweet things. I am more of a eggs, bacon, and toast kind of guy. If it's in the nighttime, though, I will make myself up some pancakes or waffles.
Nice.
Yeah. How about y'all?
Gotta be hash browns for me.
Shit, man, hash browns. I never feel like making hash browns in the morning, but Yeah, nighttime hash browns. Okay, my question for you, Dennis, when you say hash browns, are you referring to shredded potatoes fried up all crispy with a creamy center, or are you referring to diced up potatoes?
This is difficult. Like, I would take either.
What do you it's not what you do. What do you prefer? Because that is a question. Do you like hash browns or home fries? I am asking you, what do you mean when you say hash browns?
Oh, I mean the shredded.
Okay.
Ones.
Okay, you can live.
I have another hash brown question. Okay. Have you ever had hash browns better than Waffle House hash browns?
Nope.
All right. I don't think they exist either. Yeah.
No. It is the right ratio of all the ingredients. Those ingredients being potatoes, grease, and salt.
Yep.
Yeah.
And square cheese.
Yeah. No, hash browns are very good. Like that. How about you, Ben?
Breakfast tacos I make often, so I imagine that would be what I would eat in the PM.
What do you put on a breakfast taco?
My go-to is just do saute onions and peppers, and then put eggs in there and cheese on that, and it can be a vegetarian taco.
It's pretty good. Like that. How about you, David?
So I answer this sort of two ways. If you're asking like what do I actually eat for breakfast, I only actually eat two meals.
This is breakfast for dinner.
Well, I only eat one thing for breakfast and one thing for dinner.
Okay.
So for breakfast, it's generally like a bagel with a massive amount of peanut butter on it.
Classic. Yep. Mm-hmm.
However, if we were doing like what breakfast, if you could just eat anything, it would definitely be an English breakfast.
Oh yeah, getting some beans up in there. Do you go blood sausage or?
I think at least a sausage,
but not necessarily blood sausage.
No.
Gotcha.
Hash browns, eggs, basically anything that can be fried.
I got you there. Yeah, and yeah, as a fan of savory breakfast, I can respect that. Yeah.
I do question how the entirety of the UK has not succumbed to heart disease, but
there's something about boiling that changes food temperature that makes you live forever, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
They offset it with tea drinking.
Right. All those tannins cleanse the system. Let's see here. Greg writes, what's the most you paid for a single game and any special reason why? I can answer this. $340 plus tax.
Which game?
That is Rock Band 3, the base game. I replaced the, so that is $60 plus $130. I replaced my original wired drum kit with the wireless pro drums. And that was $130. And then I spent $150 on the pro guitar, the Mustang, that had the all the individual buttons and stuff like that. That was 150. So, 340 plus tax.
I kind of love that peripheral, just like the one step between realizing, oh wait, we could just do it with a real guitar at that point.
I mean, they had one. They had one at that point. No, it wasn't $100. It wasn't $60 as the base price. Let me see here. It was $130.
It was way more.
Price. Because I had the keyboard. So let me add. I think it was $130 with that. So that would be another $70. Yeah, $410 because I got the keyboard with it as well. I use my old guitars.
If we're considering like any peripheral, I feel like depending on how much you spend on your instruments, could like Rocksmith plus an actual electric guitar count?
I don't know. Maybe. But even that like is kind of dwarfed. So both of my electric guitars, the one I got in high school, I got for $50. And my the Epiphone that I have, I think that I paid $210 for that. And my Jaguar bass, I think I paid like $200 for that. So I don't know if you add all of those up, I consider Rocksmith to be more of a teaching aid than a game. I don't know if that's unfair or not. Like Rock Band does not necessarily work without those, like without each of those individual instruments like that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just curious, was because I think, you know, I know you definitely play the most like retro games of any of us, mm-hmm. and maybe you know, started playing games the earliest. Did you ever have, you know, I hear stories about like, oh yeah, if you like, you know, look at this game for, I don't know, like Nintendo and do like, you know, adjusting for inflation, it actually cost it like $130 or, you know, something like that. Did you ever buy one of those sorts of games? And also, did you ever buy like a retro game that was super, super expensive because it was hard to get?
So back in the day, I think some of the most expensive games I would have gotten, the most expensive game I would have gotten would have been Super Mario RPG for the for the SNES. That was a, that,
what about like, the Olympic game for like Nintendo?
The state. Oh no, I didn't buy that. My family got that.
Okay.
No, the track and field is what that one is. So I like that. That
I
was
appreciate that we're being very thorough about this question, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's worth thinking about. I don't know, to me, to me anyway. Definitely. I think that I got it. I think that I asked for or bought Super Mario RPG used, and I think even at that time, like it originally came out at about $100 and I got it for 70. I don't know what the adjusted for inflation is. It's definitely not more than the Rock Band cost. As far as like modern rarities that I've bought as an adult, the most expensive game that I own is Rule of Rose. I have that. That is a PS2 survival horror game. I have that because Brian Wade found it at a Half Price Books for like $30 or something like that. I think I paid him $100. Good.
I was gonna say Half Price Books, double priced video games.
Yeah. I think he bought it for like $30 or something like that. And I said, hey, I'll give you $100 for that. And he said, yeah, sure. He bought it specifically for me. So I gave him that. Like right now, if you look on Amazon, it's $378 used. So like $100 for an individual game is probably the most that I have paid for like a piece of software. Mm-hmm. I think I paid like when I got Haunting Ground, I rebought Haunting Ground after I gave it to a girlfriend and lost it forever. I got that for like $70. And that was before it really ballooned in price. Now though, oh wow. Yeah, if you get like they've got a new copy here. That can't be right for $14.74. That is incorrect. Because a while ago it was, I don't know, maybe the bottom fell out of that market. And let me do another one. Echo Knight Beyond. All of these are horror games. Like horror games just get ridiculously expensive. Echo Knight Beyond is not actually on Amazon as far as I can tell.
Are you reading from like a spreadsheet, by the way, of all the games that you've purchased in your life?
No. I just remember, okay. Like I know the name of the expensive games that I own. No, all but right. But I got Echo Knight Beyond for like $15 at GameStop, and now it is a very costly game. Let me go to eBay and see what the price is. Echo Knight Beyond.
That's as a side note. Do you have a way to stream Rule of Rose? Because that actually looks really interesting.
I did. I streamed it several years ago, and it should be up on the YouTube channel for Duckfeed.
Okay, I'll track that down.
Yeah, it's a really cool game. It is just a real pain in the ass to play. Echo Knight Beyond is like $70 if you want to get it new. That is not as expensive as I thought. Sorry, I didn't mean to dominate that. Who else has an answer for this question?
I'll say the answer for mine's a board game. Cthulhu Wars is the most that I've paid for a single game.
Ooh. And
no special reason why. It has sweet figurines, but I don't even care that much about figurines. But I guess it's kind of sweet. But yeah.
That's cool. How about you, Dennis?
Thinking of software, I shelled out $80 for like the deluxe edition of Destiny 2 when it came out because I am a schmuck and gullible. I was like, oh, they'll fix everything. They'll iron it all out. They figured it all out with the first game. This will be a real high quality. Nope. It had all the same problems.
I thought you had fun with that, though.
I did for what it was. And then just as time goes on, my memory has been more and more unkind, especially when they started releasing the paid expansions that negated the fact that I invested so much up front. Hmm. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you bought the super duper deluxe version, but now here's the real game.
Yeah.
Well, if the worst answer you have is $20 over normal cost of a game, I think you're doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was probably more like $100, but yeah. Okay.
Also, I feel like, kind of related to that question, I feel like Destiny 2 becomes a much worse value proposition once you realize that, like, Dauntless is free to play.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you, David?
So I don't think I haven't bought many like collector's editions, you know, anything like that. The only one that comes to mind is like the original Guild Wars, I think I did. Halo 2, something like that. But those were both, you know, early in the game before the companies realized how much money they could bilk people out of.
But even that, like Halo 2's special edition was like $60 or $70, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was not particularly. And
for
I've
a
never
dented
really,
steel case. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And I've never really done like, you know, retro game or, you know, anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think, though, if we're going to get sort of semi technical about it, arguably I bought a Wii U and then ended up only ever playing Splatoon on it.
Okay.
Which, granted, I'm not entirely convinced that that is not the correct way to own a Wii U.
That's fine. Yeah.
You know, maybe that, and there's probably a good Zelda game for it at some point.
I mean, Breath of the Wild came out for that. So, like, the Wii U has, as far as I can tell, three exclusives that I'm interested in. One is, I don't know. That is a weird number. The Wii U still has the Wonderful 101 and Super Mario. Super Mario 3D World. Those are very good. But
yeah, it's also Nintendo still has a weird thing of like they have exclusives that I just don't want to play on their systems. Namely, like Bayonetta and until recently Monster Hunter.
Oh, right. Oh, you can play I think Bayonetta 2 is that's on PC now, isn't it?
I have no idea. It would make sense if it was.
Yeah, I may be incorrect on that. More questions here. There's one that is just a reiteration of it's an answer to a previous question about which games do you play over and over again to make them perpetual. Warren writes, I play all the Batman Arkham games once every 18 months or so. So you're not alone in that, Ben.
Yeah, apparently not. That's sweet.
And then Bill Darrow asks a final question here. What is the worst alcoholic beverage you've ever had?
Malort.
Oh, Chicago done you bad, huh?
Yeah, I had some coworkers who were from Chicago, and they gave that to me. I think I threw up that night. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it was not a fun time.
No, but Malort is a challenge drink. I've never had it, but I've had it described.
It's a drink where apparently like 1 out of 50 people think it's delicious. Like it's kind of like reverse cilantro, you know? Where,
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you got to take that hit if you want to find out.
Yeah. I personally prefer, if you drink it while wearing a fedora, it becomes a milady.
How about you, David? What's the worst alcoholic drink you've ever had?
I think Baltimore style Bloody Mary.
What in the world is that?
So blood basically
from a person from Baltimore.
Yeah, in Baltimore, Bloody Marys are made with Old Bay seasoning.
Ugh.
And just like, you know, everything else about Baltimore, it's just awful.
It's funny.
Except for The Wire.
Well, of course, yes.
Well, because the Wire is an incredibly compelling look at why Baltimore specifically,
East Baltimore, specifically, yeah. East Baltimore.
My only part of Baltimore I've been to is East Baltimore. So like I could be entirely biased.
No, but Ben is correct. I misspoke. It is West Baltimore.
Yeah. They cover both. There's a truce between them. They write entire fiction of that in season 3.
Okay.
They go to the docks in season 2. Gotcha. They go all over the city.
Yeah, no, it is a portrait. Yeah. But it does present the less savory side of the city. Yeah, it's a very good show. Yeah, no, the reason I laughed is because I did a search for Baltimore style Bloody Mary, and you never see a recipe site like with a bad rating on anything. Everybody is always really positive on stuff, like, oh my god, I love this, my kid loves this, etc. On the Daily Meal, Baltimore Bloody Mary recipe by so and so, it gets 1.5 stars.
Oh no.
That's the first result you see for it. Yep.
How about you, Dennis?
Yeah, I was in Boston, and I can't remember the name of the brewery that we walked into, but they had this like maple chocolate porter.
Ooh,
that
delicious.
Well, I was kind of right at the end of my porter phase, and I was kind of getting a little tired of like the peanut butter chocolate drizzled, you know, this that. And I read that, I was like, oh yeah, that sounds great. And then it was just disgusting to drink, like trying to choke down motor oil. Yeah. And it's actually the beer that made me be like, you know, I think I'm done with porters for now. Yeah. And I can't remember having a porter since.
Never went back.
So that's pretty bad. That's a beer that got me to swear off an entire genre.
Harsh. I guess it's Boston, though. I can't think of too many good breweries out of Boston, but that could be bias.
Yeah.
This week on The Level, cities that we secretly hate.
Well, I mean, it's just an indictment of the whole East Coast, I think, is what we're doing here. Because
I like Baltimore. Wait a minute, I
resemble that remark.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm not going to get rid of the part where you're at specifically when I have all the power.
Don't worry. Global warming will take care of that for you.
Of course. For me, it was a day at my old company when they gave us, every Friday we would watch the videos that we shipped that week. And they, for a while, they put out beers for all of us to eat. It was an event called Beers and Peers. And I just went up and I grabbed something from a brewery that I enjoy. I don't know if it was like Flying Dog or, you know, something like that. But it was a brewery that did like adventurous stuff, and the things that I had were fine. But I grabbed something and only paid like half attention to what it was. And I took a big drink of it and I was like, oh, this is like seawater. Like, what in the fuck is this? And it wasn't a Gosa. Like, I like a Gosa, even though that has salt in it. It's like a salt and sour kind of thing. No, what I had and what I wasn't ready for was something called an oyster stout.
Yeah,
so it had all of the charm of a stout, and I'm good with a stout. It's fine. But it had the nice little just added tang of oyster juice in it. And it was the fucking worst thing.
Is that also from the East Coast? Because yes. That sounds like an incredibly East Coast drink.
Yeah, it's a real... I went and looked up because I wanted to know exactly who to get mad at. It very much is like an Oyster House style beer kind of thing. Like people have done that. And like I don't want animal in my alcoholic beverage at all. Like I know that you can make like a Caesar or like a Bloody Mary that has clamato juice in it. Like I don't like a chelada or whatever. Like I just don't want anything with clam juice or stuff like that. And I just, it tasted so bad. Like I can still kind of taste it like back up in my sinuses a little bit. Really bad. And whenever anybody asks like, hey, what kind of beer do you like? And I say, you know, I'm not really partial. Like I'll drink pretty much anything, like even out there stuff like a Rausch beer or something like that. There's only one beer I've ever spit out. There's only one beer that I've poured out and washed my mouth out for. And that is this one goddamn oyster stout. And that's all the questions. We went a little bit long.
We got through.
We went a little bit long, but it was worth getting through. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the next thing. Oh, no. Before we do that, if you want to participate in these, look at our Facebook page, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
And I had a question come through while we were recording about alternate places. So if you're in the Slack and you don't want to be on Facebook, I'm happy to field the questions there as well.
Cool. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are exciting us in the world of video games. Let's see here. Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, I'm going to keep mine very brief. Bandai is going to release a 2-to-5 scale model of a bunch of famous old consoles, meaning Donald Trump will finally be able to comfortably hold a controller. Zing!
Whoa!
I'm done.
Orange Man has small hands.
Yeah.
He should be impeached. He's an awful president. He has shit for brains.
He's making it easy, it seems like, although I'm sure it won't be.
Yeah. Continue.
As a side note, you know, if there does end up being a civil war from all this, you know, definitely, you know, I should be able to get you guys out of Ohio and to safety.
Yeah, Dennis and I are the ones who are in the most danger from that, I think.
Yeah. So. 3-hour train ride to Vancouver from here, so you guys are welcome here as well.
I mean, we're about 3 hours from Canada.
Yeah. No, we could go up to Windsor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. Anyway, that's all. Literally all I had.
Cool. No, this looks really neat. Like, it even has like little circuitry inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of console action figures. Let's see here, Ben. How about you?
Yeah, so details of Last of Us Part 2 were released this last week, I think. So it's coming out February 21st of next year. And they announced that there's not going to be a multiplayer element to it. And they've showed some gameplay trailers of it. And they I don't know how much to talk about, I guess, like the story-wise. But they explained a little bit of the context of the story. Yeah, so I think all that information kind of got dumped in the last week. And it looks sweet. So, yeah.
Yeah. I never did the multiplayer. Dennis, as the person who did the multiplayer in the first Last of Us,
I did the multiplayer in the first one as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
it's really a shame it's not coming back, because it was really good and really unique. It's the one place where people were consistently productively using comms with randos.
No,
like you had to cooperate if you wanted to win.
Yeah, it was real class based too, right?
I don't remember. I remember that the crafting system was super prominent, to where you know, a lot of the game was about getting to the right materials and building up the stuff. I can't remember how locked in you were to what stuff you wanted to build at the beginning. They had a pretty, I'm remembering, a perk system. So maybe that's what you're thinking of.
They might have had a riot shield in it, but I don't remember.
They did have a riot shield. I remember that.
Okay. I think that's as class based as it got, is what weapons you had.
You definitely went into matches knowing the role you wanted to play.
Hmm.
I just know Polygon had a article on the fact that Last of Us 2 will include dogs as enemies. The fact that might be a pass for me in particular, because like apparently you have to hear like your enemies like grieve when they find the bodies of like their dog you killed.
God damn.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That is a lot to ask.
So in the video too, they said that they named all the characters too, like the NPCs and stuff. So the same thing happens if you kill a person as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I mean, try and make it like accurate, like try and make the violence like realistic, you know, in the sense that you should not take it lightly, I guess, you know?
Yeah, which I think is a good thing. Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I'm way more bothered about the idea of killing a named dog than a named human in a video game. Fair.
Like, most dogs I've known have been better than most humans I've known.
I mean, yeah, there's no such thing as a bad boy. David, how about you?
Yeah, so just because I can and I'm, you know, a loose cannon, something not at all related to video games. If you get a chance and you have Netflix, Woo Assassins is a really good original series.
WOO or WU?
WU. As far as I can tell, the reference is to the, I think it's the Wuxing, which is like the Chinese five elements.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it stars, I know I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Iko Uwais, who's the star of The Raid.
Okay.
And it's, you know, set in San Francisco's Chinatown. So it's a lot of fun for me because it's like, oh, yeah, I know that.
Hmm.
It's also funny because Iko is very much not Chinese. So they explain it as him being half Chinese, half Indonesian. But like, it's very, very which, I mean, makes sense. Like, he could, I guess, look like that. But yeah, he does not look at all like someone who's, you know, full-blooded Chinese,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of funny. But yeah. They do at least address that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's great, great fight choreography. Just kind of fun. One of the things I like is, and this is fair, really minor spoilers, but basically he gets the power to basically channel like all these, you know, hundreds of monks that have come before him. So they do a lot of fun things with the choreography where it'll, you know, apparently when he's fighting, you know, everyone else sees him as some like, you know, random Chinese guy that's, you know, one of these monks that lived back in the past,
mm-hmm.
which is why, you know, people, he, you know, he basically is able to have a secret identity. Mm-hmm. But then the choreography will switch back in a single scene between you seeing it as, you know, this, you know, monk fighting versus you seeing it as him fighting.
Oh, and they managed to make that not confusing doing the intercutting like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And they do a really good job of, you know, his fighting style, he's a Sealot fighter, but then there's definitely a lot of, you know, kind of techniques and moves where you're seeing, you're like, oh, that's like very clearly Kung Fu.
Mm.
So it's kind of the opposite of Iron Fist, where you watch that, it's like that guy knows no Kung Fu.
Yeah, nice. So Wu Assassins.
Yeah, so highly recommend.
Yeah. Mine is related to a way to play games. There's no specific story about this, but I guess it's kind of related. Steam, Valve, delisted and stopped selling the Steam Link hardware. And I swear by this thing. Like, it's really great to be able to play PC games that you own on Steam in your living room would be the way to do this. I still have my Steam Link, but yeah, it's, you know, it sucks having another thing plugged into your TV. A while back, they released a Steam Link app for the Apple TV. I own an Apple TV and say, oh, great, cool. I'll be able to download this app, have one less thing plugged into my TV. No, actually, you have to have either the Steam controller, which I've decided, it has its uses, but I don't want to use it for, like, a shooter or anything like that, or, like, bad controllers from a particular manufacturer that work in some applications, but not necessarily.
Only works with Mad Catz controllers.
I mean, kind of, just stuff, like, I have one, like, a listener a while back sent me one. It was like an MSI Nimbus controller. It doesn't feel great, but it works for particular things. Regardless, with iOS 13 and with tvOS 13 having come out here very recently, Apple added the ability to pair Bluetooth PS4 controllers and Xbox One controllers with Apple TV and with iOS devices. So I would not recommend doing this if you have to buy new hardware. However, if you have an Apple TV, one of the new ones that can run the apps from the App Store, and a Bluetooth controller from a current gen system knocking around, you will be able to just straight up play modern PC games streamed over your network from your PC to your Apple TV in your living room on a good controller without having an extra dingus plugged into your television, which is just a completely unqualified, unconditional win for me.
Take it.
Yeah. Do it. Try it. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button. Okay.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. We've gone a little bit long, so I will not prolong this. If you are in the area, be sure to come out to the Portland Retro Games Expo. I will be there. We're going to be doing a live show. I don't know exactly when, but that will be the weekend of October 19th and 20th, I believe. Yeah, it'll be a good time. We'll be tabling and doing the live show. Otherwise, Patreon, Apple podcast reviews, things like that. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia at Deck of Wonders, Twitch, and then Deck underscore of underscore Wonders on Twitter.
I'm David Meismith in Witness Protection.
So you're the whistleblower. I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. All right, hit me with them.
I had one, and I forgot to write any down. Intergalactic Drug Wars.
Okay.
I had Pits are the Tops.
Pits are the Tops?
Yep. Okay. I had Buster.
Okay.
I also had app name, B-O-S-T-R.
I also had Buster. I admit that I wrote my own down. That is shameful.
Oh, you're fine.
At least you feel guilty about it every week that you do it.
But that means I'm not learning, and that sucks.
I've got A Poor Time for an Oreo, which is, you know, may or may not be an outtake, but I found that just a fun turn of phrase.
Okay.
And then I've got Reverse Cilantro.
Well, a lot of our titles have the construction of reverse something.
I think it's really the same joke over and over again. That's why.
How about you, Ben?
I got two. I got Hot Dogs and Cancer.
Dark. Okay.
And then I got Terminator.
Okay. So I am also bad. I also have Terminator. So the two that we have are, so the two that have the most votes are Buster and Terminator. I also wrote Bandai and Kazooie.
So I really like Bandai and Kazooie, and I really like Terminator.
It's like, you know, the buffalo.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take a hands off on this. How do you guys feel?
I'm going to go Terminator.
Okay, that's two votes for Terminator. Ben, do you have a convincing case against?
I have no preference as usual, so two would be a strict majority in this case.
Okay. Terminator. Cool. Yep, I'm going to go. I'm sorry this went long, guys.
No. I was actually happy we got through all the questions.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Take care, y'all. Have a good week.
See you guys.
See you. Yeah.